When you look at endotoxemia, what is this LPS thing? We talk about lipopolysaccharide, which is the endotoxin that's being absorbed through the lining of the gut in a leaky gut and ending up in circulation, right? So what is this LPS? Well, it's an inflammatory immunogen, meaning it's a component of a type of bacteria called gram-negative bacteria. So every bacteria in the world that's ever been discovered can be categorized as gram-negative or gram-positive. The main difference between the two is gram-positive bacteria have a cell wall structure. So they have an inner membrane and then they have a cell wall, which is much more of a rigid wall. Gram-negative bacteria don't have the cell wall. They only have a cell membrane. And within that membrane, they have these LPS components. Now, the bacteria use them for lots of things, for communication, for binding, for things that bacteria need to do. They're not particularly harmful when they're in the whole bacteria, but when LPS is released because a bacteria lyses or dies in the gut, you end up with that LPS being free on its own and eliciting an inflammatory response, right? Because it is an inflammatory immunogen. Your immune system is designed by nature to look for LPS because it indicates the presence of gram-negative bacteria. And lots of gram-negative bacteria are pathogens or opportunistic pathogens. In fact, when someone dies from sepsis or septicemia, it's often because they got too many gram-negative bacteria in circulation, right? So gram-negative bacteria that contain this LPS is something that your immune system is always watching out for to try to protect you from sepsis. And so when it sees LPS, even if it's floating on its own, it elicits a really massive immune response, right? And so the LPS is very abundant in gram-negative bacteria. Keep in mind that a single gram-negative bacteria can have between 1 million and 10 million LPS molecules in its membrane, right? So, and about 50% of your microbiome are gram-negative bacteria. Like something like 80% of the microbiome in your mouth are gram-negative, right? So imagine if in your gut, where you've got somewhere around 30 trillion organisms, half of them, 20 trillion or so, are gram-negative. Let's say at any given time when you're eating food, and this is why metabolic endotoxemia or postprandial endotoxemia is labeled that way, is because the process of eating and digesting food kills a lot of microbes, especially in the small bowel, right? Because you're releasing acid from the stomach that's entering into the small bowel. We talked about how all that happens a module ago, release of pancreatic enzymes, which also kill bacteria, the specific release of antimicrobial peptides and bacteriocins from the intestinal epithelium to try to control bacterial overgrowth in the small intestine. That kills a lot of bacteria. The release of bile. Bile is an antimicrobial. It kills a lot of bacteria. And just the churning and the action of food digestion in the small bowel kills a lot of bacteria. So during the digestion process, lots of bacteria is going to die. So if you've got, say, 20 trillion, 30 trillion bacteria in your small bowel, or you probably wouldn't have that much because the small bowel has a smaller concentration. Let's say you have a trillion bacteria in the small bowel and 15% of them, 20% of them die, right? So you've got 200, 300 million bacteria that die during the digestive process. Half of them are gram negative. So you've got about a 100 trillion bacteria that are gram negative that are dying in a meal. And each of those 100 trillion bacteria are releasing 1 to 10 million LPS molecules, right? The number of LPS molecules that are being released during digestion is mind-boggling, right? And if your gut is leaky, a huge percentage of that LPS is leaking through and entering into circulation instead of being sequestered and caught by the IgA and the mucus in the small bowel and not being allowed to leak through, right? So this LPS is very abundant in the gut. It leaks through when your gut is leaky and you have too many gram-negative bacteria and a combination of both of those things. And when it leaks through and it's circulating on its own, your immune system sees it as a direct threat and expresses a very profound immune response wherever it sees it. In fact, it's so profound that your immune system actually secretes a protein called LBP, LPS binding protein, that constantly circulates through your body looking for LPS. And when LBP sees LPS, it grabs onto it and it takes it to the dendritic cell or macrophage, and it shows the dendritic cell and macrophage that, hey, there's LPS around here. We really need to upregulate the immune response, right? Because it thinks that there's pathogens in the area. And the part of the LPS that elicits all of the immune response and toxicity is this lipid A tail. Now, you'll see through the presentation that saturated fat, certainly a high fat diet, and saturated fat specifically can increase endotoxemia in people with leaky gut. That always becomes a controversial statement because, again, people are very activists about their diet. And so, if you are a carnivore person or a paleo person or you're a keto person, they tend to get offended, if you will, by that kind of thinking because they go, well, no, paleo and keto and all that are healthy for you. So, how can they elicit more of an inflammatory response? The fact of the matter is, if your gut is leaky, right? It can't protect you against endotoxemia the way a normal gut is. And a normal, healthy gut can eat any of those things without them causing a problem. But if your gut is leaky, what tends to happen is an elevation in saturated fat and fat in your diet alone can increase endotoxemia and the immunological response of endotoxemia for a couple of reasons, right? So, number one, you look at this endotoxin, the top part here is a polysaccharide, meaning it's a sugar. It's like a carbohydrate, if you will. But the bottom part and the largest component of the endotoxin structure are these lipid tails, right? So to your body, LPS kind of looks like a fatty acid. It has these lipid tails to it, right? So it looks like a fatty acid. So one of the ways in which your body absorbs dietary fat, which is really important to absorb, is that the intestinal epithelial will secrete lipid rafts. These are carriers that go out and grab dietary lipids and bring it through, right? Or dietary lipids are brought through on immune cells or these other carriers called chylomicrons. These are like little encapsulators that grab dietary lipids and bring it inside the endothelial or the epithelial cells. Inside the epithelial cells, they are converted to lipoproteins. This is where LDL comes from and HDL comes from, right? LDL is low density lipoprotein, HDL is high density lipoprotein. These are examples of lipoprotein carriers that are made in the body, in the lining of the cell, and in the liver to some degree. And triglycerides is another carrier system to take fats throughout the body from the intestinal lining and from the liver, and carry those fats throughout the body where it needs to go. Well, why is it doing that? Because remember, we covered this in module two, I think, where fats don't solubilize in the body because the body is generally an aqueous environment, right? Fats and water don't mix, but the cells are aqueous. Your circulatory system, your blood system, your lymphatic system, they're all aqueous. So fats don't mix or dissolve in those aqueous solutions. So bile helps with creating the surfactant. Remember, the role of bile is to create the surfactant around the fat that's in the digestive tract. The surfactant fat now moves into the cell. In the cell, they put it into carriers like chylomicrons, low density lipoprotein, high density lipoprotein, and it gets carried throughout the body. This can happen to LPS as well, right? So LPS can get surfactant by the surfactant action of bile. It can grab the LPS, pull it into the cell. The cell can put chylomicrons around it and carry it throughout the body. So it's carrying a toxin throughout the body inadvertently. And your body makes more and more of this when you eat more and more fat in your diet, right? So imagine you've got a trillion LPS being released in your gut during digestion, and you've got a whole bunch of fat in the diet. Your body is going to ramp up the activity of bile and chylomicrons and carrier lipids in order to grab the dietary fat and use it, right? So as the process of ramping the ability to grab the dietary fat, it's going to grab more of that trillion LPS versus if there's a lot of fiber and protein and other things coming through, it doesn't upregulate the fat absorption as much. So it doesn't inadvertently bring in as much LPS. So that's one reason why higher fat intake will increase more endotoxemia. The second part of it is saturated fat has very similar structural elements to LPS, to the lipid A component of LPS. So saturated fat can elicit an immune response itself, especially if you don't have high tolerance in your microbiome and immune system, right? So if your immune system is dysfunctional, if you've lost tolerance, if you're sensitive to lots of foods, if you have leaky gut, then saturated fat can increase immunological response in the lining of the gut and in circulation as well, because it has very similar structural elements to this lipid A tail that your immune system is always primed to look for. Right. So hopefully that makes sense. Now, it doesn't mean that meat or saturated fat is inherently bad. What it does mean is that if you have leaky gut or you suspect you have leaky gut, right, then you probably should not go on a strict carnivore diet or paleo or paleo in the sense that it's highly ketogenic and so on. Right. And maybe there's times to be able to do that and do that with a practitioner, do it for a short amount of time and so on. But it doesn't mean the food is bad. It means your system is not handling the food properly. Right. If your system is perfectly fine and healthy, you can handle all the, fat, and you can handle all the saturated fat and get all the benefits from the meat. Meat can be very healthy for you. But if your system is not functional, you won't be able to handle it as well, and it could perpetuate even more problem. So hopefully that makes sense to individuals, right? So this just gives you a little bit of an illustration of all the different things that can happen as a result of a dysfunctional diet that drives endotoxemia, that drives immune response, that drives microbiome dysfunction, and so on, right? So just a couple things to mention here. So when you look at let's just take this as an example of poor dietary choices, right? Heavily processed foods with lots of pesticides, herbicides, antimicrobials, poor quality nutrients, high sugar levels, all kinds of things that we know are bad for you. One of the consequences is, of course, increased endotoxemia by increasing lipopolysaccharides, and that endotoxemia drives a lot of inflammation and a lot of dysbiosis in the system. It also increases this hypoglycemic and high fat response as a result of eating this type of food. This can also increase inflammasomes and inflammatory molecules in the gut, and then systemically, it also elevates histidine and the issues related to immunological function in the gut microbiome. You also have this issue of central adiposity. You get fatty acids infiltrate macrophages infiltrating fat cells. You get the fat cells producing lots of hormones that are poor, that are really bad for your system, for your metabolic system, releasing pro-inflammatory cytokines. The macrophages upregulate immunological responses within the fatty acid tissue, and you get this central adiposity issue. And then ultimately, most of these things lead to a disruption in the gut microbiome and a barrier dysfunction and immune dysfunction, right? So ultimately, all of these pathways lead to a further disruption of the gut microbiome, further activation of the immune system in an unfavorable way, further permeability issues, so more leakiness, more inflammation, and then ultimately you end up with all of this metabolic syndrome. And metabolic syndrome is the most common form of underlying chronic disease in the Western world. And then most other risks of chronic disease stem from metabolic syndrome. Of course, you can develop other chronic diseases without the presence of metabolic syndrome, but we're speaking in generalities here. In generalities, metabolic syndrome is an underlying factor for most chronic disease. Just to show you a couple of examples here, right? So this is a study called the CordioPrev study. They followed 462 patients over, I think it was a 62-month period, a 60-month period, who had high risk for early onset, type 2 diabetes, right? Or type 2 diabetes in general, not necessarily early onset. But they were looking at people who had a high risk of developing type 2 diabetes, meaning they were probably pre-diabetic, or they had other comorbidities like overweight and other issues that would likely lead them to developing type 2 diabetes. They followed these individuals and they looked at all of the biomarkers involved in their system. And they were trying to find a biomarker that was predictive of the development of type 2 diabetes from being high risk to develop type 2 diabetes. They showed that postprandial endotoxemia, right, was the best predictor of developing type 2 diabetes and precedes the development of type 2 diabetes, meaning an elevation in postprandial endotoxemia came first, and then LPS, the presence of LPS, was not only a driver of the formation of the resulting type 2 diabetes, but also could be used as a predictor, a biomarker predictor of the development of type 2 diabetes, right? And keep in mind, type 2 diabetes is the biggest health crisis we are facing today. When somebody is diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, or they're at that level with their A1C, blood sugar, and so on, their risk for every other chronic disease goes up tremendously, right? When you have type 2 diabetes, your risk for cardiovascular disease is 2.5 to 3-fold higher. Your risk for Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and dementia is 2.5 to 3 times higher. Your risk for autoimmune conditions and cancers and all of that stuff goes way up. Your risk for obesity and all that goes way up, right? Of course, you have peripheral vascular disease and neuropathies and blindness, and all of these things go way up when you develop type 2 diabetes, right? So type 2 diabetes is a very, very dysfunctional state for the body to be in, and it's one of the biggest risk conditions to have because it drives risk for all other conditions. And endotoxemia is the driver of the formation of type 2 diabetes. It's arguably one of the most potent drivers and one of the most potent predictors of the development of type 2 diabetes. And on the globe today, we already have something like 700 or 800 million type 2 diabetics, but we currently have 4 times that many pre-diabetics, 80% of which will end up with type 2 diabetes, right? So over the next 10 to 15 years, we will see the presence of upwards of 4 billion people on Earth with type 2 diabetes, right? Novo Nordisk will become the number one most valuable company in the world. It's up there as number two or three in terms of pharmaceutical companies because they're the biggest producers of insulin in the world. They're probably in the top 15 most valuable companies in the world. Apple, of course, being the most valuable company in the world, I think worth $3 trillion. But over the next 10 to 15 years, Novo Nordisk, who's also the developer of one of the GLP-1, Ozempics, is going to become one of the most valuable companies in the world. And the problem with that is those 4 billion diabetics are going to drive healthcare costs and healthcare management through the roof, right? Because of the risk of everything else, even the risk of fertility issues and low birth rates and hormone imbalances, and everything becomes problematic because of the formation of type 2 diabetes. And the biggest driver of type 2 diabetes is endotoxemia and leaky gut, and it's also the biggest predictor, right? So we cannot underscore how important this issue is. So the first few things I covered in the first few slides, if you really understand that stuff and you really understand endotoxemia and what happens when you develop endotoxemia, you are wrapping your head around and understanding the pathway and the biochemistry behind the biggest global health crisis we are currently facing and will be facing in the near future. Then we have cardiovascular disease. We've always known that obesity and type 2 diabetes increases cardiovascular disease risk. Well, as it turns out, it was never really understood why, right? Why being overweight, why having diabetes increases your risk for cardiovascular disease. Now the studies are showing that metabolic endotoxemia, which is the commonality between cardiovascular disease, type 2 diabetes, and obesity, is the molecular connection of why individuals who have elevated endotoxemia, who ended up with type 2 diabetes and obesity, why they have an increased risk for cardiovascular disease. It's not necessarily the obesity or type 2 diabetes, it's the underlying endotoxemia that they have in the first place. Remember, endotoxemia precedes obesity, type 2 diabetes, and so on, meaning it's present at a high level. And as a result of it, you end up with type 2 diabetes and obesity. And it's that same endotoxemia that also causes cardiovascular disease and every other inflammatory condition in the body, including things that impact the brain, where we now know that microbiome-derived polysaccharides, lipopolysaccharides, so LPS, can be found in the perinuclear region of the Alzheimer's brain. And it's a clear connection between what is driving an inflammatory response in the brain that starts to degrade the neuronal tissues. Right. So this is it's just another connection. And then looking at things like cancer, cachexia, right? So we know that the wasting syndrome in cancer is one of the biggest drivers of mortality in cancer. And these kind of big studies are showing that endotoxemia is a key part of the process of the development of colon cancer-related cachexia and other cancers as well. In this particular study, they looked at cancers like melanoma. And a couple other ones, and lung cancer as well. Endotoxemia in these individuals, which was present before the cancer and then gets increased as a result of some of the cancer treatments, is what drives the formation of cachexia, which is that wasting syndrome, which is what becomes the biggest predictor of mortality in cancer in general, right? So endotoxemia is really, really potent. Here's a whole bunch of other mechanisms that are driven by endotoxemia, everything from leptin resistance, chronic constipation, of course, mood, appetite disruption, and then depression, anxiety. In fact, there was a huge Netherlands study called the Netherlands Study on Anxiety and Depression. They found that serum LPS levels was the best predictor of not only the onset of anxiety and depression, but the severity of that anxiety and depression. They could predict it. And this was a 9-year study following individuals, right? Chronic pain, hypogonadism, which is low testosterone in men. In women, estrogen dominance is also a feature of endotoxemia. Autoimmune issues, of course, because of all the immune dismantling that I referenced earlier on. All of these conditions are driven by endotoxemia.